Good News Ministries of GNM.org. It's the Catholic place for growing your faith. Good News Ministries will provide you with faith-building reflections, virtual retreats, prayer resources, and lots more. All of it is free. Visit GNM.org today. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Lisa Hendy and Friends. This podcast is from Breadbox Media, and I'm so thrilled to be with you today to bring, I think, what will be an enjoyable and important conversation. Joining us on the show today is John Meyer, and John serves as the executive director of the Napa Institute and has been in that role since June of 2014. Such a wonderful, well-known institution, but we're here today to find a little bit more both about John and his own faith journey and especially about the work of Napa Institute for the larger church, the conferences and other events that they hold, but especially the work that they are doing to revitalize and reinvigorate the church and those who serve her. Welcome to the podcast, John.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
Well, it's a treat. Now, before we dive into all the official stuff, I'd love to just know a little bit more kind of about you and your family and how you find yourself at this point in your career working for the church.
Well, I am a convert, about 10 years a Catholic, and my wife as well is a convert. I grew up in a non-denominational, kind of what would most people consider a mega church. And, you know, faith was important. It wasn't crucial in my life early on. But when I went away to college, we kind of lost touch with the church, with the Protestant church. And shortly after my wife and I were married, we were just having some kind of difficult times in our business and other things. And we found a very wonderful priest and kind of touched with the Catholic Church. And you know, as we got to learn more about the church and the truths that are there, we were drawn in deeper and deeper. So through that journey, I kind of fell in love with the faith in a way I never thought I could, especially the intellectual parts of the Catholic Church. And, you know, I think everyone at certain points in they're seeking kind of truth and meaning in a meaningless and kind of disordered world. They're seeking that order and meaning, and it's found here at the church. And once we fell in love with the church, we got really involved in our parish. I started taking courses at Augustine Institute and other places, and even for a short while discerned the diaconate at my parish in Chicago before meeting Tim Bush and making the jump to run the Napa Institute, which has been a tremendous blessing for me. It is just me and my wife. We are unable to have children, so we're discerning adoption and other things, but for now, she's kind of the unofficial first lady of Napa and travels everywhere with me.
That's amazing. How wonderful. And please thank her for her kind of behind-the-scenes support, because I'm sure that this is a whole family endeavor that you're in, so that's amazing. So
We spend about 200 days a year on the road.
Wow.
So it's she comes with me everywhere, so it is truly a family on wheels. It's a family affair.
And I see from your official bio that not only is she serving in that capacity, but that she also has a lot to do with your family business as well. So she must be a busy person.
Yeah. So we had a commercial real estate firm in Chicago, brokerage firm, and we still dabble in that a little, but for the most part, Napa Institute has become our life. So, you know, she's really the other lung here at Napa that while she doesn't have an official title, she is very much part of the team.
That's amazing. So one thing I think I wanted to dive into is sort of some of the history of Napa Institute. And to understand, I think a lot of people associate it with this annual conference that many of us follow and, you know, kind of dream of attending someday. But there's a lot more to it. And how did it get started? And where are you guys positioned right now in terms of serving the church all year long, not just during the conference?
Well, yeah, it started 9 years ago, and it did start as just one conference. And that was, it started by Archbishop Chaput, Father Spitzer, and Tim Bush. And the kind of reasoning behind it was Archbishop Chaput wrote a letter, Catholics in the Next America, and he talked about how it would be difficult or prohibitive for a Catholic leader to live their faith in the, what he called the Next America, which for a while we talk a lot about the Next America, but the truth is we're in the Next America right now. We're in a secular culture that's hostile to our Catholic values. And we wanted to create an institute that prepares Catholic leaders both intellectually to defend not just what the church believes, but be able to articulate why the church believes what it believes. We wanted to create communities. We wanted to create a kind of spiritual respite to understand both the intellectual and spiritual aspects of this essential culture war that we're in. So the Institute was founded as just one small conference 9 years ago in the Napa Valley with about 100 people coming together. And they looked at three of what they felt were the biggest issues at the intersection of faith and culture, and they wanted to do, substantive formation, community building, and prayer and liturgy. So that's grown now. Our main conference still happens every July. It attracts about 700 Catholic leaders, about 100 different Catholic and Christian organizations to it. It's really a half a week of rigorous formation on all sorts of various topics, from religious liberty, spiritual topics, all sorts of things that we feel Catholics need to be out there on the front lines of the new evangelization. But then in addition to that, we break the group up into smaller groups to create community where, you know, bishops are meeting with benefactors who are meeting with people who are running Catholic organizations. And then the last part is creating almost a retreat. There are, this year from Wednesday to Sunday, we celebrated 105 masses at the Napa Institute Conference. We have spiritual direction and confession and Eucharistic processions and retreat talks and all sorts of things to kind of prepare the heart as well as the mind. So that conference is still the staple. But throughout the year, we do all sorts of other things. We do priest retreats for our clergy. We do things for politicians, for business leaders. We do pilgrimages. We do symposiums on topics as they're needed. So we'll do 8 or 9 events a year. And then we have a support foundation tied to us, the Napa Institute Foundation, that supports other institutions that are at that intersection of faith and culture.
And while it's referred to as the Napa Institute, I read that you and your wife actually live down south of me. I'm in Los Angeles. And really, it sounds like you're sort of constantly on the go. So this is a work not only based in Napa, but really that's now going out to the entire country. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we live down in Orange County, so just south of you. Our office is in Irvine, right by the airport here in Orange County, but we spend probably 200 days a year on the road. Last year, we spent 3 months of the year in Europe, so about a quarter of it. We do both pilgrimages over there, but we also do conferences for Europeans on these similar issues. But then throughout the year, we have an annual event in New York. We have annual events in Washington, D.C. We do the symposiums everywhere. We've done events in Florida and Texas and Illinois and kind of wherever we think we need to be. The main conference still is the hub of everything that we do, but we try to feed people in very specific ways at the smaller events. One of the best examples of that is priests. We sent about 700 clergy through formation last year in four different priest conferences or events, and those covered different topics from homiletics and scripture to parish management and administration issues. So when we see a need, we try to meet it so that we can have we're really equipping these leaders to be who they need to be to evangelize the culture, whether they need to be the priests at the top of their game, business leaders who understand their vocation to business and can articulate issues in society, or politicians who need to know how does my Catholic faith inform public policy, especially in things that are maybe more difficult. We all know how Catholics should be thinking about life issues, but what about immigration? Where does it fall on that? So we'll do symposiums and cover topics that will help leaders better turn to their Catholic faith first rather than, you know, political party or other things like that in the culture.
That's amazing. So much opportunity there and so much need as well. I mean, it kind of goes unsaid that the mission that you serve right now is so critical, not only within our country, but around the world. How do you see the evolution of where you are in terms of the larger church and, you know, where you're going to be going into the future?
Well, we have a big strategic planning session coming up this fall with our board to talk about this. But we feel like Napa Institute is, rather than being the one out here there making the change in the culture, we're equipping those who have the ability to make changes in their area to do that. So we want to bring in experts on all sorts of various topics and create we want to be that space where people come together to be re-energized so that then they can go out and be the agents of change that they need to be. You know, every crisis is a crisis of saints. Well, we need saints in politics. We need saints in business. We need saints at the altar. We need saints really all over the church and all over society. So we're here to try to create those saints by giving them community among each other, by giving them liturgy and the sacraments, that spiritual renewal, and then by giving them the tools to be out there in a hostile world. That's the, you know, you say more than ever that we need this. Well, every year it gets worse. You know, religious liberty issues, the way that we're attacked, our values, and we need to be able to not just know, well, I believe this because the church tells me or it's written in the catechism. We need to be able to articulate, natural law and other things to win these arguments in the culture, because simply going to your non-Catholic friend and saying you should believe this because that's what the church says isn't enough. And the church doesn't believe anything by accident. So we want them to be able to go out there, and when it comes to euthanasia or assisted suicide, we want them to be able to win the argument from a philosophical standpoint, not just a faith standpoint.
So I want to kind of look at those three bullet points that you talked about: liturgy, community, and tools. And with the first emphasis on liturgy and worship and actually our prayer lives, it occurs to me as somebody that I spend most of my waking hours every day trying to better understand my faith and communicate it to other people. And I know that for myself, sometimes I fall into this trap that one of my friends described as spending so much time talking about God that we forget to be in conversation with Him. And so can you just talk about why that piece, building up people's faith lives? I mean, you might think the average priest or bishop or a leader of an apostolate, you know, they've got this all figured out. They don't need any emphasis on that. But what are you hearing, you know, kind of indirectly from those who attend, especially the conference, about what that means to them to come and be reinvigorated spiritually?
Well, yeah, our priests need it more than anybody. They're kind of attacked doubly hard in the spiritual warfare here. You know, it's so easy for us to confuse faith and activism. You know, you talked about prayer life and the importance of that. Sometimes we get so busy, especially when we're doing things like working for an apostolate or if you're a priest in a parish, where your work becomes your faith, and you lose that relationship aspect. You lose the actual faith aspect. You know what I mean by that is, let's say my job is Napa and I'm doing things to advance the church, and I replace my faith with the activism of the Institute. I'm working all day towards this goal. Therefore that becomes my faith, and I neglect my prayer life. I neglect the sacraments. And that's just not healthy for us. It's not good for us, and it's not real faith, but it's a very easy thing to slip into, even for our priests, where their priesthood becomes a job and not a vocation. So bringing these guys together so they have a chance to have camaraderie among themselves, because it can be a very lonely thing, especially these days in the diocesan world, but they have a chance to slow down and to remember. Sometimes we forget the spiritual aspects of things. We get so caught up in the temporal world and what needs to be accomplished here that we forget that, you know, all around us is God is here to help us, and we need the time to prayer and talk to Him and go to Him. So giving these priests a time for prayer, giving these priests a time for camaraderie, and feeding them. Usually the priest conferences cover topics like we do an annual one with Scott Hahn in January on Scripture. We did one with Bishop Barron and Huntington Beach on homiletics. I mean, getting these guys back into more of a retreat is what we try to do with the priests. Fall in love with their priesthood all over again. And I think the same thing can happen in the apostolate world. We serve, like I said, at the main conference, about 100 different organizations. And so many of these organizations are doing great work, but that great work, it's a danger to replace that work with your faith life, with your prayer life, with your sacramental life. You need to have balance of mind and heart.
Absolutely. So let's look at the second component, that community building. And I think it's interesting in today's world where we're so deeply connected with one another in an electronic capacity that sometimes we forget the great blessing of actually physical presence and walking alongside someone and actually being with them. Can you talk a little bit more about how Napa Institute kind of emphasizes that with the community building that you do?
Yeah, being present with another soul. It's Napa brings together really the top leaders in all different fields, the top benefactors and leaders of apostolates, and brings them from around the country together so that they can kind of revitalize their work. Because so many times we feel like we're on an island. You're working in Chicago on a certain project and, you don't interact with the people who are the other side of the country here in California that are doing similar stuff. And, sometimes you feel like you're alone and you're isolated and you need that time to come together every year. And that's where Napa becomes like a family reunion. You get all of these great works of the church and they're all coming together in one place at one hotel in the Napa Valley, which is a beautiful place to kind of unplug and relax. It's a safe environment where everyone around you is kind of on the same path, doing the same work, and it's a refresher for you. You talk about social media disconnecting us. The problem with social media is the echo chambers. We can become so disconnected with people. It shouldn't be social media; it's anti-social media. The echo chambers it creates of the way our news is curated, the way our information is curated to us, where we only hear the same things. And a lot of it's meant to create anger and frustration. It's a huge problem. There's no civil discourse anymore because we've all been so polarized through the kind of echo chambers of social media. Well, this is a chance for us to come together and be human again, to relax in a comfortable environment, to share meals, to share frustrations and joys and understand that while when I'm back home and I'm doing this work, sometimes I feel like I'm alone and it's a big job. Well, here are all these hundreds of other people that are doing equally great work. Many of them doing the same things I'm doing in different parts of the country or around the world. A lot of our European friends will come in for July too. And you'll see, I think for them, they feel really isolated. Europe, they don't really work country to country the way we work state to state as much. So, guys in France and Poland and Italy, sometimes they don't even know each other and they're doing the same type of work.
Yeah. And the reminder that we're all coworkers in the same vineyard is really important, I think, in those settings. So the last emphasis on tools, and you've talked a little bit about some of the work that you're doing around the country. I'm wondering when somebody kind of would initially look at Napa Institute and, obviously there's the main conference, but what are some of the other main resources that you would want to share with someone who's just learning about this for the first time?
A lot of our talks and activities, at least all of the main session talks from our conference in July and all of the main session talks from our Principal Entrepreneurship Conference and Bound Business in New York, those are mostly posted on the website, on YouTube, on form.org, which is Augustine Institute's great platform. So we want to get a lot of that material out there. We have a newsletter where we curate articles on different topics. There's a lot of ways to touch base with us. But, prayerful support of us, telling other people about it. If you have the ability to get to one of our events, we do have events that will cater just to whoever you are and where you are in your faith journey, whether you're someone involved in your parish, your business, an apostolate or a politician, whatever you are, we have something for you. And the idea is, we need saints in every aspect of life. And you're called to be that saint. I think we had a conference on authentic reform last October where it was right after some of the scandals broke with McCarrick, and everyone was kind of anticipating what we were going to say at that conference. Most people thought it was going to be pitchforks, but really the message was any kind of reform starts with yourself. you know, you need to be the saint. You know, I think Curtis Martin was the one who said it. It was like, if you're waiting for that cavalry of saints to come across the mountain to save us all this time, and they're not coming, it's because those saints are in these seats. They're you guys. You know, you need to be the ones that are doing the small things where you can to make the big difference. So that's what we try to do. We try to encourage people to, you know, not do the impossible, but start where they are, in their parish, talking about issues in their offices, in their neighborhoods, you know, and not just issues of evangelizing strictly on a faith-based thing. We try to talk about evangelizing on cultural issues too. It's like, maybe you're not ready to be Catholic, but I'll tell you why you should be pro-life, or why you should, you know, think this way about kind of social economic issues or immigration or other things. You know, being able to explain things from a Catholic lens to their non-Catholic friends is just as important to us as being able to evangelize them. Ultimately, we want them to come home to the church, and we want to equip them to do that. But starting with just cultural issues, that's where NAP Institute really kind of strives to be.
In a way, you've kind of answered this question already by sharing the places that people can pick up the resources. But I'm particularly interested in these days in our young leaders. And I find myself like just watching with an amazement at some of the entities that are cropping up in the church, you know, Catholic creatives partnering with our Sunday Visitors Institute for a big project, or Catholic Connect, or the Hallow app, you know, these young men and women, young kind of chronologically compared to me, but, you know, filled with ideas and energy and the intellect and the faith, frankly, to make these things happen. Are there any kind of special outreaches to the young leaders out there from NAPA Institute?
There are a lot of the people who come to our events are scholarships. Many of those scholarships are for younger folks. And it's for exactly what you're saying. You know, where's the hope in the church? There are so many initiatives that are being started by young Catholics, kind of the millennial generation who we talked about earlier, that grew up in a world that was so disordered and so meaningless that they're seeking order and meaning, and they're finding their home in the Catholic Church. And they tend to be on fire for their faith and really looking to bring that out to their, you know, lost generation, essentially. So, yeah, there's a lot of that great work going on, and that's why you talked about our three pillars, you know, faith, community, and formation. And that community pillar is missing from so many Catholic organizations, and that's why it's important, because these types of collaborations that you talked about, so many of those things have come out of our conferences where we've had, you know, a benefactor, a bishop, and a person with a great idea together for a wine reception after dinner, and they're sitting around talking for 3 hours about the idea, and everything is launched while they're there. You know, we need to bring the good Catholics around the country together so that they can share ideas and collaborate. You know, like you said, we're all working towards the same goal of evangelizing the culture, of bringing people into relationship with Jesus Christ. So we need to have opportunities to share ideas and collaborate together. And that's where things like community excel, and young people need the opportunity to be there as much as those who have been in doing their work for 30 or 40 years. And that's why many of our scholarships go to young people that we think deserve a shot.
Amazing. So next year is the big 10th anniversary. It probably feels like that just flew up on you. And I'm sure you were already planning the day after this year ended. What are some of the big hopes for next year as you celebrate 10 years?
Well, we're still getting the schedule together, but I hope to have some of our favorite speakers from the past back, you know, try to have, you know, really just a big celebration. I do have some ideas. Archbishop Shapi has been our longtime ecclesial advisor, the chair of that board. And I do kind of want to honor some of the things that he's done throughout his career, you know, his work at bringing faith into the public square, or supporting apostolates. You know, many of the apostolates around the country that are doing all this great work, these lay-led initiatives, look to him as kind of their leader, whether officially or unofficially. Mm-hmm. So I want to spend a lot of time highlighting kind of the great work of his career as he's coming closer and closer to retirement. But I do have a bunch of ideas, nothing that I can really talk about yet, but Probably sometime in the winter or early spring, we'll make some big announcements.
Awesome. I can't wait to hear. And I really am. I'm praying for the opportunity to attend. I would love to be there. And just also praying for you as you take on this work. Where's the best place if people want to go to one spot to kind of discover everything about Napa Institute that they should head?
Our website would be the spot. So www.napa-institute.org. So Napa, N-A-P-A-institute.org.
Awesome. Well, don't worry, friends. We'll have that linked up in our show notes so you can click through real easily and get a hold of that and all the other information that we're discussing. John, I'm so grateful for your time and especially for your leadership and, you know, for what you're a part of creating. Any kind of closing thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners before we let you get back to work?
No, I think we covered quite a bit, and I appreciate your work and bringing the faith to all your listeners.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time. And friends, that is it for this week's episode. The conversation will continue online, so definitely come on over to lisahendy.com or breadboxmedia.com where you can click on those show notes and discover other great podcasts for you to connect with your faith. Until next week, I wish you and yours all the best. Have an awesome week.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tours Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.